So yesterday, in the afternoon session, the topic of the five faculties came up. So I thought I would explore that a little bit from Saito's perspective. As I mentioned yesterday, and as came up in the question, Saito defines the five faculties working together as being what he calls awareness. And before I get to that kind of itself, I want to just reflect on the word awareness a little bit. I like the word awareness for what we're doing. It feels evocative to me. When I ask myself, am I aware? It evokes a sense of what we mean by being aware, because we have a sense of that word. For me, my use of the word is I mostly mean it pretty much synonymously with mindfulness. The word mindfulness to me doesn't have that evocative quality. If I ask myself, am I mindful? It's a little more clunky. And so, you know, for me, the word awareness, it's got a light feeling, it's less head-centric, it kind of has a broader sense. And so, for me, I really like that word, using it to mean what we mean when we say mindful. Also, I think mindfulness may come with, at least for me, in learning about mindfulness, I learned about being mindful of things rather than having a sense of the experience of mindfulness. And awareness, I think, is evocative more of a state, of a kind of a sense of a state of mind, which is what I believe the Buddha is pointing to in the establishment of mindfulness. Sati. The establishment of sati. So sati is often translated as mindfulness. And so in the most of the English translations that we have for the Pali Canon, the word sati is translated as mindfulness, and then there are other words. Chitta is often translated as heart-mind. Vijnana is often translated as consciousness. But there's, in at least in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, there isn't a particular word that he uses, that he translates into awareness. And what I hear in various teachers and teachings is that teachers and certain traditions even perhaps use this word awareness in different ways. So it's really useful if somebody is talking about awareness to ask them, and what do you mean by awareness? And that's exactly what I did with Saito in one of my group meetings with him, and where I first heard him describe, well, what I mean by awareness is the five faculties working together. And I will go a little bit further in that, because I did, after he talked about that for a little while and we had a conversation, largely this talk grew out of that conversation, I would say. Or this reflection that I'm offering this afternoon grew out of that conversation that I participated in with Saito. But at the end of that discussion, I said, okay, so but when you say awareness of awareness, are you talking about, what are you talking about there? And he looked for a little while. He said, I think I mostly mean awareness of mindfulness. Being aware that we're mindful. Now, he may have changed his mind since then. But in that point, he was pointing to, you know, be aware of what it means to be mindful. So different, the word awareness can shade, and another reason I like the word awareness is because it feels like it points in some ways to the natural quality of mind that seems to be here when we are aware. You know, that the mind knows, it perceives, it recognizes. It, you know, it's like when we are aware of what's going on in our minds, we're aware of all of the stuff, like the sights, the sounds, the smells, the tastes, but we're also aware of what's going on in our mind, and we're aware of the knowing side of it. We're aware that we know things. And sometimes that's what people mean when they say aware of awareness, is that they mean aware of the knowing. And so this word awareness does shade in many different ways, and so, you know, it is useful to check in with people about what they mean. And so just a little bit of an exploration of that this afternoon. And just before I get into the five faculties, there was a question that came in about what say something about the difference between awareness and consciousness. And so this is in that terrain right now. So I think I'll just speak to that for a moment. Using awareness as and as I said, you know, sometimes people use the word awareness to mean something more like consciousness, but using awareness to mean more what I mean by that mindfulness, then the difference between what we'd say consciousness and mindfulness. Consciousness, translating the term vijnana as one of the five aggregates, five processes at work in our bodies and minds that are continually at work, whether we are aware or not. And so there is this knowing function that's happening in our mind. Now, whether we're mindful or not, the mind knows things. I had a great example of this so clearly presented to me. At one point, I was driving to IMC, and I was coming a slightly different direction, and so I made a kind of note, okay, I'm almost up at the place where I need to turn left. And then my mindfulness got lost. And it went into some thought. I don't remember at this point what I was thinking about, maybe what I was going to talk about. I have no idea at this point what it was, but there was, you know, the mind really got lost into that world. And then I found myself sitting at a stoplight, and mindfulness returned. While I was sitting at that stoplight, I recognized, wow, mindfulness is back. And the mindfulness had been very far gone. Like sometimes we can have there be a little bit of a sense of what had been happening. It's like I had zero memory of passing my turn, zero memory of even being on a road. It was a little bit startling. I haven't quite, you know, that's unusual for me to kind of get so into. It was like the mind had gotten so into its thoughts there that it couldn't even remember that I had passed the turn, and, you know, it's like, oh yeah, you know, it didn't remember that. It was just it was absorbed in its world of thought. So mindfulness was not there, not aware, not even the sense. I mean, some sense of potentially being aware with the thoughts, because when the mindfulness came back in that moment, sitting at the stoplight, I could remember what I had been thinking. So, you know, there was that thinking process that had been going on, and there was some sense of being kind of cognizant of the thoughts that had been happening while I had while I had not been mindful. So mindfulness wasn't there. The mind was kind of absorbed in its world of thoughts. But here I was sitting at this stoplight. It had been, maybe as much as a block and a half. It's amazing how fast mindfulness can just go whew. So it wasn't a long stretch of time, it was maybe 40 seconds or something like that between the time that I thought, oh yeah, I need to turn, and the time I was sitting at the stoplight, and then that like gap. But something, and the something that was taking care of me, something took care of me. Something was seeing and recognizing the road and seeing that there was a stoplight there that I should stop at. Knowing was happening. Perceiving was happening. These five aggregates of knowing, perceiving, feeling, mental formations. Mental formations were happening. The intention to stop happened. I didn't see that. Mindfulness was not there, but consciousness was there. Something was knowing that driving process. So that's one way to kind of reflect on the difference between awareness and knowing. Knowing is something that is just a part of the tumbling on of our human system. It's like something that's taking care of us and helping us to navigate the world. And there are times when mindfulness can arise. So these five aggregates that, the body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, those are happening all the time, whether we're mindful or not. What mindfulness does is like infuse the experience of those so that mindfulness can become aware of any and all of that. So we can become aware that we're knowing. We can become aware that we're perceiving or feeling or have mental states arising, or aware of body, or aware of a combination of those things. So consciousness is a functioning of mind that's always going on. Mindfulness is what I would call a mental formation. Of those five aggregates, mindfulness is one of them. It is a mental formation that arises, that's got a special property to be able to be aware of the mental formations and consciousness and perception that is arising. So, consciousness and awareness, different in that way. Mindfulness or awareness is an activity of mind, a kind of a doing activity of mind that recognizes what's here. We could say its job is kind of to recognize what's here and to, in some ways, to track what's happening. The Buddha points to mindfulness as being connected with remembering, so there's a kind of a tracking of what's going on in the mind, tracking of experience. And that was a little bit of a detour from the main topic, but seemed like it would fit in at this point in the conversation. So the five faculties, and these five faculties are qualities that Sayadaw says kind of work together to, we could say, create the mind that meditates, or the mind that is aware. And these five faculties are confidence or faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Another way to think about these five qualities that Tanisaro Bhikkhu uses is he speaks about these five qualities as being the qualities that support the skill of mindfulness, support the skill of mindfulness practice, that support the skill of our meditation. And he wrote a lovely article or paper on that these five qualities in the mind are supports for any skill that we want to develop. He described how, you know, if you want to develop the skill of a particular sport, you need these five faculties to develop a skill. So they're connected with the development of skill. So, for instance, in playing basketball or learning how to play a piano or something, there's, you know, the wisdom. We need to start with some kind of, we need to know the rules of the game. If we're, you know, we want to become skilled at basketball, that's the first thing. We need to learn something about the skills of the game. We need to learn something about the skills that are part of that game. So, you know, wisdom. We need some kind of basic kind of knowledge first. And then we need some confidence to engage with that. And then energy. We need energy. If we're sick or low energy, we may not be playing the game very well. And some awareness of what's going on around us to track, you know, the people, the what's going on, where the ball is. Mindfulness needs to be there to track that. And some focus, the concentration, the focus on the ball, on where people are, so that there's a kind of a zoning into what we're doing. And then as those skills get stronger, then the knowledge and the kind of the practice of doing that over and over again. We start with having to learn the kind of skills of playing basketball, but then we get more through the practice, engaging with confidence and knowing the rules and engaging with confidence and energy and mindfulness, concentration begins to build. We begin to have that sense of, the sense of being able to focus on the game. And then the skill gets stronger. The rules of the game, we don't have to think about them so much anymore. They kind of get embedded in us. And that's when the kind of the knowledge of begins to kind of be more intuitive in a way, we could say. And so, you know, Thanissaro Bhikkhu describes these five faculties as being useful for any skill that we need to develop. So they're kind of five neutral qualities that can be applied to many different things. I mean, we could become very skilled at getting very greedy. We can become skilled at being a surgeon. And we can become skilled at being aware and practicing with the interest to free the mind from suffering. And so the first place to kind of be curious, it's interesting to me that faith is the first on the list. Usually it's listed as the first of the five faculties. But in my kind of reflecting on it, I feel like, well, you have to have faith in something. And so let's back up to that. What is it that we have faith in for this practice? And that is something that we've learned. It's the kind of rules of the game, you know, in basketball. It's like, you know, you need to read the rules first. You need to get some learning about how this works. And, you know, what we need to gain some confidence in is what the Buddha taught. First of all, that this is questioned. The Four Noble Truths is one of the definitions for what, you know, the wisdom of the Buddha kind of represents. And so these five faculties can be aimed in many different directions, but when they're aimed towards the wisdom of the Buddha, they create the conditions for our mind to gain that intuitive wisdom, gain that understanding about what leads to the release of suffering. And so we do have to start somewhere. We have to start with that kind of learning, listening to talks and hearing teachings, understanding a little bit about the nature of greed, aversion, and delusion, and how that contributes to our struggle and suffering, and the release from those leading to freedom from that. So some basic understanding about the direction the Buddha was teaching. And then also some basic understanding about the practices that he's teaching. Because that, to me, the practice that he's teaching is where we move into the engagement. We might have confidence in what the Buddha taught, so the first of the faculties, given that we have some wisdom or some understanding about the direction of the path. We might have some confidence in that. But the confidence needs, I think what part of the wonderful things about the Buddhist practice is that the teaching both includes this kind of framing of how the mind works, and then also some practices with which we can look at our minds to understand for ourselves how the mind works. Simply hearing from the Buddha, this is the way the mind works, and having confidence in that doesn't seem to do much for us. But the tools that he offered us, this is the place for me where we need to gain some kind of confidence that, yes, I can do this. So some confidence in what he says may lead us to be inspired to engage. Some confidence in his description of the workings of the mind. I mean, and in my experience, my first kind of sense of that confidence was not so much confidence in the description of the Buddha gave of the mind. You know, it's like, well, you know, this you know, it's greed, aversion, and delusion that are creating the struggles, and you know, suffering is created by craving. I didn't quite get any of that, and you know, I wasn't even so sure that you know, looking at my mind would help. But there was a little bit of a sense in, okay, this person says, and my friend, the other key was my friend said, yeah, this has been really useful for me. You know, that, so the Buddha said this, and my friend said that, yeah, this has been working for me. So that was enough to give me just a little bit of confidence to say, okay, I'll give it a try. I don't quite get how it's supposed to work, but I'll give it a try. So that can be, you know, so I think these faculties, there's a way in which they, you know, they reinforce each other. You know, you actually don't need a tremendous amount of confidence to begin. But for me, it was just a simple matter of willingness. It's like, okay, the Buddha said that observing experience is useful. I don't get quite how observing anger is going to help me out, but let's see. So there was a willingness. And in retrospect, as I look back on this, it's like that was the first bit of faith. You know, it's faith that even that willingness is an expression of, well, okay, this is a hypothesis. I'm willing to run the experiment. Let's see. So, you know, faith is faith not only in the teachings, but also in the practices, that the practices are doable. And so when we have that sense that we can engage, that confidence that we can engage, and there is something that we can do, then that generally leads to energy and engagement. That's the next faculty, that there's the engagement of action. And confidence can inspire. It's kind of in the realm of intention and direction. Confidence can inspire, and then we need to act. And energy is required to act. So we cultivate this engagement with these tools. And early on, you know, we do have to engage. We have to pick up the practice. We have to remember, yes, the Buddha said that when this is arising, I'm supposed to orient to being aware of what it's like for that to be happening. You know, kind of stepping back from the intention to act on it and just being curious about it. That takes some energy at first because it runs so counter to our usual way of engaging. And so we begin to develop not only the confidence and the curiosity of the practices, but then as we engage, it does take personal effort. As Sayadaw uses the term, personal effort, where We have to remember the teachings, remember, it's like with basketball, you know, how do I dribble? You know, okay, I do this, and I have to run and dribble at the same time. I have to practice that. You know, so there's some engagement with that. We have to remember it. And it takes some active personal engagement to do that at first. As we do that, one of the key things that we're doing as we engage with the Buddha's teachings is we cultivate mindfulness. We cultivate this capacity to be aware of what's happening while it's happening. The perspective of wisdom is coming in to help us with that, so that it's not just simply awareness in the abstract. It is aware of experience as human experience in this moment. And again, this takes some remembering of this perspective at first. And as we engage with energy and mindfulness, we get little, the continuity that I was speaking about this morning. We get a little bit of that, little moments perhaps of continuity. And the continuity or the persistence of that mindfulness over time, that is this fourth faculty of concentration. We often think about concentration as being one-pointed, but there is a stability of mindfulness. One of the key definitions of a concentrated state in the suttas is that the state is absent the hindrances. It doesn't necessarily, and actually when I read the suttas, there's only a very few places when the Buddha talks about cultivating concentration that he says, aim your attention at a particular object. Most places it's not specified. So the concentration can be cultivated by persistently aiming mindfulness at a particular experience. And it can also be cultivated by committing to that continuity of awareness, of mindfulness. The stability of awareness with changing experience creates the conditions for, it's like each moment there's something new arising, each moment mindfulness meets it. If that keeps happening moment after moment, there's not a lot of room for the hindrances to come in. This kind of place or state where the mind is able to just watch or receive the kind of tumbling on of experience without kind of resisting or holding on to or being confused about, that is a state without hindrances. It can be a state without hindrances, a state of concentration, a stability of awareness, even though the objects may not be stable. Changing objects, awareness stable. And as that begins to get stronger, the tool, so essentially here we're looking at cultivating the skill of being mindful from a particular perspective. So the five faculties are that kind of happening together. The cultivation of the skill of being aware from this perspective is what we're cultivating. So wisdom is infusing this whole thing, and the confidence and the energy and the concentration kind of results from this. And with all of that, because the direction of the practice is infused with the perspective of wisdom from the beginning, that's what we are cultivating, is a mindfulness that is from that perspective, that then, as the Buddha pointed us to, if you cultivate mindfulness from this perspective, you will begin to understand that the craving is leading to suffering. You will begin to understand the impermanent nature of experience and how clinging to that is useless, creates stress. The famous Bahiya Sutta, the Buddha pointed to, you know, in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. He said to Bahiya, that's how you should train yourself. That's the work. So the perspective, can I know experience as just experience? Seeing is seeing, hearing is hearing. That's the perspective. And the Buddha said, train yourself that way. And then he said, when for you, in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. So when that perspective is how experience is arising, how experience is being known, the Buddha says, there will be no you in terms of that. The understanding, the wisdom arises not because we're trying to do it, but because these five faculties are working together. The wisdom is infusing the way in which we're directing the mind, and then we begin to understand impermanent, unreliable, not self. And that understanding, when we understand experience as impermanent, unreliable, not self, the mind basically gets that, yeah, it doesn't make any sense to cling to this. And so it begins to let go. So the wisdom helps the mind to let go of its ways that it typically clings to things. And so that becomes a strengthening. The wisdom is strengthened. That fifth faculty, which in the way that the five faculties are generally described, faith first, and faith, confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. Wisdom is the result of the first four faculties working together, but those first four faculties working together with the condition of the perspective of the Buddhist teachings. So it's like wisdom also has to be at the beginning. Not the wisdom of the insight and the understanding, but the wisdom of this perspective is worth cultivating. And so they strengthen each other. When we get those experiences, we get the taste of, for instance, seeing how the mind can release clinging and experience the release of that clinging. When we get the taste of that, that leads to more confidence, leads to a sense of, yes, this is a good direction to go. The first real deep insight that I had after the first few months of practice of really watching and seeing the mind kind of heading in the direction of anger, and then having experienced in the previous months of how painful anger was, just watching the mind go, I don't think so, we're not going to do that. Just let it go. You know, that moment of like, oh my gosh, wow, I had no idea it was possible for the mind to let go of that by itself. Like I sank to the ground in gratitude. And the next like thoughts were, I'm going to keep doing this. This is good stuff. so the wisdom that we see through these faculties working together inspires us. Gives us more confidence, gives us energy, encourages us to practice more. And so they reinforce each other. They support each other. They reinforce each other. And so these, you know, together, I mean, like, I think of these really as the supports for us to practice, but they're not always, it's not like they, you know, they get stronger and stronger and stronger continually in a never increasing line. Sometimes wisdom is strong, and sometimes conditions happen that delusion like charges back in and wisdom is obscured. And in those moments when we can see that, yeah, it doesn't feel so natural to understand. Like, I remember so many times having seen something so clearly, and in that space of having the wisdom so present, of like, you know, wow, this is just so obvious. It's so obvious how silly it is to cling to something. And then delusion comes back, and it's like, wow, I guess it wasn't so obvious, because I cannot find that place where it's obvious that it doesn't make any sense to cling to things right now, because the mind is clinging to things right now. And so not to try in that, not to beat ourselves up in that moment, but to just understand that these faculties, you know, kind of, they're stronger at times and weaker at times, and conditions are at play in the in how they are arising in any given moment. One of my inspirations for asking Sayadaw this question about what do you mean when you say awareness is that, you know, and kind of this curiosity about getting familiar with the experience of being aware, which I'm encouraging you to do also, was because I began to recognize there wasn't just one experience that seemed to be, you know, like, it wasn't a stable thing. It wasn't always the same when I was aware. And I was kind of curious about that. It's like, why is it sometimes like this and sometimes like that? And he said, that's because the five faculties are at different levels at different times. So, for instance, you know, when wisdom is a little weaker, then we do need to draw on, like, when the understanding, the insight wisdom is weaker, we need to draw on our learning that we've experienced, the knowledge of how the practice works, and also our own kind of remembering. We can reflect on how this has supported us. And so we draw on the wisdom that we've learned from others and wisdom that we've learned from our own experience. And sometimes it does take a kind of remembering. Yes, I know it doesn't feel very good to be mindful right now, but I know it helps. Drawing on that knowledge from my own experience. So you know, when the wisdom is a little less strong, we need to engage a little bit more. The personal effort is needed. Sometimes confidence is strong, sometimes confidence is weak. You know, that can affect how the experience feels. The strength of mindfulness, also, the strength of energy and mindfulness. Sometimes we just have low energy. And, you know, paradoxically, I mentioned this in some of the groups, you know, one of the things we typically think of when there's low energy is that we think we should be, you know, trying to raise the energy somehow in order to practice, in order to be mindful. But what may be actually more supportive is to acknowledge or kind of orient to, well, this is the level of energy that's here. And what does it mean to not resist that, try to, you know, whip up the energy, but just acknowledge, like, start from where I am and be aware. You know, be aware that this is the low energy state. Mindfulness, the possibility for mindfulness doesn't actually take a tremendous amount of energy being available. It's really great, actually. What does take energy is the kind of the trying to hold on to it, to do it, but just in a moment, It doesn't take much energy. And if we align with, wow, okay, low energy's happening right now. Yeah, but seeing's happening, and I'm aware of that. Hearing's happening, and I'm aware of that. I'm not doing that. The system seems to be doing that all by itself. The seeing and hearing are happening because the body is alive, and there's a little bit of energy there. You know, there's the body isn't dead. There is some energy there. So it doesn't take a lot of energy to be aware in a moment. And if we can align with that, sometimes we can find our way into almost a surrender mindfulness that can allow a cultivation of concentration, even with low energy. And then the energy, a different kind of energy arises, the Dharma energy arises. I've seen this so many times. That the engagement with the practice just kind of then begins to carry the practice. Then wisdom and the motivation of the Dharma begins to carry the energy. And we don't need as much physical energy as we might think. When wisdom gets really strong, when the wisdom is, when wisdom and energy both are strong, the kind of sense of the Dharma energy being there, then it often, the experience is that it doesn't take the personal effort to engage. It feels like the practice is doing itself. And this is often when we say, as I said yesterday, the practice feels effortless. But as Sayadaw points out, if what we mean by effort is a conscious doing, that can fall away. That there is an activity that says, I need to do this. Instead, what happens is that the Dharma, the wisdom, becomes the motivator, not a sense of having to act, but the wisdom becomes the motivator. The wisdom chooses, the wisdom decides to engage. And it feels like I'm not doing it. It's effortless, feels effortless. But there's still energy happening, and in this case, the energy is Dharma energy. So one other thing I'll just, thinking about the different ways mindfulness feels at different times, it's like sometimes it feels like it's work. That's usually when mindfulness is either when the wisdom is a little weak and we have to kind of engage, or it feels like it's work because we're not aware that the wisdom is actually strong enough to be. We could take a step back. Sometimes our habit of mind to keep working isn't keeping up with the dharmas and the wisdom that's available. So if it feels like it's work, sometimes when it feels like it's work, when it feels like we're working hard, sometimes I encourage people to say, well, see, can you back off? Can you work a little less hard and see if you're still aware? Because often we are. At least this, let's say, in this, in many of the threads of the cultures in this country, that doing ethic is so strong that it's a habit, that we engage in that way, and to kind of have the sense of backing off. We tend to overdo it. We apply that habit of the work ethic, the work that I have to do things in order for something to happen. We apply that to our practice and don't quite see when the wisdom is available to carry the practice. So, you know, if it does feel like it's taking some work, sometimes backing off and saying, well, how much energy, how much effort can I let go of? Yep, still aware. How about if I try a little less hard? Yep, still aware. And then there are times when, you know, it feels like as soon as the mindfulness meets something, the whole thing falls apart. You know, the whole pattern of reactivity falls apart just with mindfulness witnessing it. That's more when the faculties are more in balance and more available. And then there may be times when the pattern doesn't simply fall apart, but we are able to hold it and see that the reactivity is kind of coming and going. You know, that may be where the wisdom is, you know, it's pretty strong. But it might not be as strong as or as strong as that the habit is strong. And so what the wisdom gets to do there is to watch the habit unfold. But one of my real curiosities in asking this question of Sayadaw was not that I could see the whole different range of things in terms of how it feels when at different times when I'm aware, when it feels harder or easier to practice, but that there were times when it felt very clear and still different experiences of being aware. And so I described to him sometimes when it doesn't feel like there's any defilements in the mind, it doesn't feel like there's any reactivity in the mind, but sometimes when the awareness is clear and it doesn't feel like there's any reactivity, it feels like there's a distance between the experience and the observing. So it feels like the mind, that there's the observing, you know, that there's kind of an independence between what's happening and the mind that's knowing it. It feels really that way, you know, that there's a, like they're two different channels almost. And I said, but sometimes when it also feels like there's no reactivity, it doesn't feel like there's any distance. In fact, it feels like the mindfulness is right inside of the experience. So not separated, but also not reactive. And he explained that as different perspectives on the same experience. So what the mind was interested in observing. So the wisdom, in one case, was interested in recognizing that the object and the awareness of the object are different things. They are different tracks. It's like there's the arising of the object and the arising of the experience, and they are not the same function in the mind. So that experience of the separation is that, he said, is that the mind is interested in, the wisdom is interested in understanding that there's a difference between the object and the awareness there. In the other case, he said, the mind was interested, the wisdom was more interested in recognizing that these two things happen at the same time. The object and the knowing happen together. It's not that one happens and then the other happens. They co-arise. They're different things, different processes, but they happen together. And so the wisdom could recognize, in one case, the wisdom was interested in recognizing that they're different aspects of the experience, and in the other case, that they're happening together. So I think that this is interesting, that, you know, the wisdom, when the wisdom starts to have its own interest, is wisdom, coming back to the five aggregates again, wisdom is also a mental formation, like mindfulness is a mental formation. It's something that arises and passes in the mind. And it is conditioned. And the wisdom, there's many different ways the mind is interested in, that the wisdom is interested in exploring experience. And three of the key ways it's interested in exploring the experience is impermanent, unreliable, not self. Those are often talked about as the three doorways of Dharma. And so wisdom sometimes might be orienting towards the suffering nature of experience or the impermanent nature of experience. And if the mind is just oriented towards impermanence, it may not be experiencing suffering so much. If the mind is oriented towards suffering, it may be harder to see the impermanent nature of the experience. It's aware of the dukkha quality there. So it's like different perspectives of wisdom can create the feeling of different experiences when the wisdom, the mindfulness, when all of these five faculties are working together. And so it's helpful, at least for me, when I stumbled into these two different ways. You know, it's like there's probably many more ways that it can feel when the mind is balanced and not reactive and fully aware. But I stumbled into these two different ways and I realized I had been trying to orient towards, it's like, the first way that many of us stumble into being aware is that feeling of separation. You know, the feeling of the mind being clearly aware. It's a kind of a sense of, oh yeah, these things are happening, and the mind is not affected by it. It's like we get the mirror object analogy, and that the mirror isn't affected by what's being reflected in it. And so that there's a kind of a, whew, you know, that feels pretty good. And then experiencing that kind of clarity or the sense of the five faculties working strongly together in that way, then our habit of mind can try to reproduce that or think, that's what I'm going for. That's the direction. That's how I need to look for mindfulness. That's what it feels like. But then when I discovered these different ways, it's like, wow, you know, going for one direction, if I may be missing something that's happening, if I'm looking to try to make my awareness feel like something else. So I think it's useful to understand that the experience of what we experience as awareness, what we are experiencing when we are aware, is a combination of these processes at work. And so it will feel different at different times. And the question is, what is it like right now? Can we just know that? And having a sense, you know, in the place where the wisdom is more borrowed wisdom, either from our own experience or from our teachers, where we're having to apply the knowledge, you know, when we see, yeah, wisdom is not as available, I need to make some personal effort. It's not a failing. It's just these are the conditions that are here right now. And so that willingness to engage, remembering the confidence, remembering the support. Another thing Saito often says, that when we really know the value of the practice, when that value, I think, when that value is present in our minds, we are going to practice. We can understand the value and forget it. It's not arising in our minds, and so we kind of forget to practice. But when we remember, and this is a way to cultivate confidence in a way, is to reflect on, remember the value of practice. Remember how it has supported us. That encourages, inspires the confidence which supports the energy for the engagement, which supports the mindfulness and the concentration and the cultivation of the wisdom. So that's probably enough this afternoon. So why don't we sit together for a couple of minutes.